Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
you are uprooted and have come to belong.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. I assume around K, you were like, he's doing the whole alphabet. And I wonder if you had some variation on, oh, okay, he's going to try to make some point out of this. Or maybe you were even like, well, you know, I could just scrub through this. I know the flipping alphabet by this point in my life. So either way, A, B, C, D, E, F. All right, I'll spare you. Plus, I don't want to be too obvious with a secret within my industry that when you don't have a ton to say, you just use filler. And then you can blame the listener for not finding it useful or profound. Today, I had a while ago planned to talk about patience, and I'm going to, but over the last couple weeks, something sort of crystallized. The idea evolved as I got closer to actually doing this, because I realized every time I've ever taught or learned about patience, it's been a side door into talking about anger, which is important, and it's not all that surprising, right? When you say you've run out of patience, you don't mean you've run out of a feeling. What you're saying is you've run out of the ability to hold back another feeling, frustration and anger. Patience is in large part delaying upset, and it's one of our most cherished traits or virtues. I mean, consider how many times God is celebrated for doing it. Some translations call God patient, and there's other translations that put it a little bit more on the nose. That they render it this way, like in Exodus 34, the Lord passed before Moses and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, not just patient, but slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. Numbers 14, the Lord is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. Psalm 86, you, O Lord, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. Psalm 103, the Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. There are over a dozen places where this phrase, almost exactly like this, is in the text. The idea of God being patient, or more precisely, slow to anger, doesn't get angry very quickly. It's like the writers over all those generations, they were really wowed of all the things God can do. One really awesome thing is God doesn't get angry very fast, even though there are anger-inducing things all around God. The word the ancient Hebrew writers were using that we're translating patient or slow, it's this Hebrew word arech, and you might be interested to find out that this word does not contain the idea of patience or slow or to or anger. Arech literally means long wing feathers, long in the pinions. So much, once again, for reading the Bible literally or trying to just take a plain reading of the Bible. I don't know any Hebrew scholar that claims the Bible will allow you to do that. God being referred to as having long wing feathers is probably this ancient idiom rooted in a picture of reach or distance, maybe even the ability to soar high enough to get a good perspective, the bigger picture, when you and I, the reason we're impatient is because we can't see very far. Either way, it's a picture of God as this pinnacle of calm, even when the circumstances are upsetting. And this is chiefly how patience is spoken of in the Bible, delayed upset. But we never really see God referred to as patient in the Bible in the sense of not needing to skip ahead or cut corners. You know, it's not like patience with, I'm okay with things being late, not going on the timeline that I was hoping for. The kind of patience we mean when we're talking about, like, I'm cool with however long the red light turns out to be. When God is referred to being patient, having long wing feathers, it's the idea of like a parent who doesn't quickly blow his stack over the misbehaving children. So God's patience is about reaction restraint. And that's a really important thing. And it's the same for people. The New Testament portrays human patience as being able to delay wrath, almost like delaying collecting on a debt. It's about not getting angry so fast. In fact, the slower, the better. So when we read Paul's words in a wedding from 1 Corinthians 13, when he said, love is patient, he was saying in the Greek sense of the word, we're translating patience, that love is the work of postponing wrath or upset. When before you knew about love, you might have just given into the feeling and uncorked it on somebody and blamed them for it. So patience in the Bible is taming the impulse to get upset quickly when things aren't going how you want. It's directly tied to anger and to upset. And then there's one more dimension of patience in the Bible where it's celebrated in the sense of waiting patiently on God to do what only God can do. It's us admitting, you know what, things are bad, they're unjust, there's so much suffering and pain. Despite us doing everything we can about it, there's only one thing that remains. It's having patience that God will do something through our continued waiting and continued doing something. So, patience in the Bible is delaying the angry or upset reaction that something outside of you is trying to draw out of you, and then also believing in good that you know goodness and love and justice have the last word. Super important stuff. That's a message right there. There's this other facet of patience. This is what has crystallized for me in the last couple of weeks that I thought was important to share, but it's not directly in the Bible in a directly stated sort of way. It's the patience of somebody who can enter into a moment, an activity, a circumstance, a process for its own sake without needing someone or something to assure them it's going to be worth it. It's going to pay off. The patience to simply be and do for its own sake. And I think what I've realized is that back when the biblical texts were being written, the people who rushed into things resisted processes because they so impulsively just want to skip ahead. I want to get to the payoff. They tried to get to these preferred results, these preferred or specific ends at the expense of well-lived means. I think those people, I don't think they were referred to as impatient. I think they were referred to as fools. I think the behavior was foolish. And I'm not going to descend into name calling, but I'm going to use this time today to talk about this other dimension of impatience that we need to bring alongside the other work of patience that we're doing. This other dimension where it's an intolerance for what is, for what's right in front of us to do, for the contents of this moment, this action, this activity, apart from any demand for results. This other part of impatience that we've sort of allowed to become part of our personalities to one degree or another. So calling us fools won't help, even if the shoe fits. But I wonder if you and I can agree now that our seeming inability to enter fully into a moment, into processes, or an inability to tolerate others' processes, this inability that might be disguised as drive or the pace of real success or an almost moral sounding refusal to waste my time, I wonder if we could agree that it could also be fundamentally an area where we lack maturity. The maturity to be able to not withdraw ourselves and our interest and our attention if specific results or particular payoffs haven't been guaranteed. I'm going to be highly autobiographical for a bit. And as always, when I do that, I'm doing so because I'm hopeful you'll be able to see yourself somehow in the only thing I'm an expert on, and it's me. This past summer, I had the incredible privilege of joining some paleontologists and some paleontology graduate students. And I spent a week in the Hell Creek Formation in Montana, digging up dinosaurs. It was amazing. My flight there had all the standard challenges to the other kinds of patients I already mentioned. And I do pretty well on that. The flight from RDU to Chicago was a breeze. In Chicago, got a little weird because we were getting ready to leave and there was all these delays. We're going from Chicago to Rapid City, South Dakota. And just the whole tone shifted. And it wasn't a big deal, but you could just feel this tonal shift. People were kind, but there was this weird tension. Like everybody had to get where they were going. Like everybody had to get where they were going. Or something bad was going to happen. Maybe I was projecting. I don't know. And then there were these four guys walking around, and it's still early in the morning by the time I'm in Chicago, and their rock and roll swagger was way too put together for that early in the morning. I mean, it looked like they were ready for a magazine shoot or something. And then I noticed lots of people who are getting on this plane, they've got a similar vibe, not as well put together as these four, but So anyway, we finally get into the air. The guy crammed in right next to me. He's never flown before. So I took it upon myself to be a calming presence for him because he looks really nervous. These four guys I told you about, they're a couple seats up. And I'm looking at them and I'm looking at others and it dawns on me, wait, there aren't a lot of sleeves on these black t-shirts that every passenger is wearing. What's going on here? All these passengers look like they want to, you know, take my lunch money. I've never seen so many skull and fire tattoos in one place in my life. So the guy next to me, it looks like he's going to toss his pretzels at one point. And as we're talking, he explains that the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally is happening that week. And he's explaining that's where everybody's going. Do you know when you're playing solitaire on a computer and right at the end, when your win is inevitable, how all the cards, they just kind of all... They all sort themselves into place. That's what my brain did in that moment when he says Sturgis, and that's where everybody's going. You know, got it. This is a jet full of bikers going to biker Mecca. Half a million people in their motorcycles. It's a really big deal. And so then the guy asked me what I'm doing. And since it was really clear I wasn't going to Sturgis. And it was my great pleasure watching him have a very positive, interested response to me saying, well, I'm heading to Montana to dig up dinos. So we land and I ask one of the overly cool rocker guys, the four guys I was telling you about. They just looked familiar to me and I asked them who they were. No big deal. It was just the band Warrant from what I thought was the 80s, but I was wrong. They're also from the 2020s. Did I get autographs? Absolutely not. I was there for dinosaurs. So the next day, I was planted for the week where some of the most iconic dinosaur fossils are found in the world. I mean, scientists and nerds travel from all over the planet to dig in this place, in the Hell Creek Formation. This was a lifelong dream come true. Just incredible. Assuming you'll understand what an incredibly positive experience this was for me, the way I want to talk about this, I want to talk about part of the experience and I want to tell on myself, because one of the big takeaways for me wasn't at all what I thought was going to be a takeaway. And the takeaway from that week was this: I have got a ton more to learn about my habit of jumping ahead to where I think results are, of skipping ahead to preferred outcomes. And if I can't do that, if I can't see a preferred outcome, then I can't value what I'm doing right now. Like I have this habit of looking for a payoff, and it can be so difficult to not be preoccupied with payoff to get to the ends, which obscures the simple and immediate value of now, where I actually am, where life is actually happening. And this habit was put on blast that week. Going into the field, I was so excited I couldn't contain myself. We get to this first site, and there's an adult Triceratops. It wasn't completely together, but there's these big pieces of an adult Triceratops that have already been unearthed from before I even got there. And it had rained, so they pull this tarp back, and there it is in the mud, part of the frill, you know, the big thing behind the horns, and then one of its shoulder blades. I mean, this bone looks like the hood of a Lincoln Continental sitting there, and I just my jaw dropped. So we're given instructions, and I'm assigned to this other area close to it, all of us are, to dig into the side of this butte to find more of it or other animals. And so for the next 3 hours, that's what I did, chipping away and then paintbrushing away, carefully looking for more stuff. In that time, one of the other more seasoned guys, a couple meters to my left, he uncovers the shoe-sized bone, almost definitely part of the same animal. And so we all ooh and ah, and he's being really careful with it, and we're looking at it, and then we all go back to our places. Well, I didn't consciously choose to do it, but I was digging like this, and then I start digging toward the guy to my left. My brain must have decided, well, let's go dig where treasure has already been found. I don't know. And so after about 2 hours, I'm not really finding anything, and I stood up and thought, maybe there's another place I could dig. So I helped somebody with something, and then I started, you know, messing around in some other area. And this sounds like a joke. It's not. Within three minutes of having gotten up and moved over, another guy squatted down where I was and was digging back toward the right where I was originally going. And he yells, I've got some bone material over here. Now, did he discover a new species? No, it was a big chunk of probably the same animal. But I would have found it if I hadn't been so fixated on results. And this was the first moment that I thought, okay, Dougherty, you're a grown man. You're an excited grown man, but you're a grown man. Stop thinking about payoff and just immerse yourself where you are and what's happening and what's right in front of you. It was meditative for me. So that's what I did. Lesson learned, right? Absolutely not. I did this over and over for the rest of the day. And it's not that I was committing a crime, but I kept avoiding now this to see if I might secure a more exciting then and that. The next day we went to a place, it's called a microsite. And if you want to have more detail on microsite, you can see me after class. But in short, when the rain comes here and there, it just continues to wash the surface layer off and it exposes all this stuff there on the surface in the Badlands, fossil plant material, animal material, extinct fish, theropod legs, little raptor claws. It's really cool. So we hike up this butte and everybody sort of parks themselves next to the sagebrush that called to them. And they just start looking and gently brushing, and they stay there. And you guessed it, an hour into it, nobody's moved. They have these little collection bags full of teeth and bones and scales and turtle shells and claws. And I've got a couple things, but I keep giving into this impulse that, you know, if I just scooted over there about 10 more feet, that looks promising. And I bet I'd find an entire rib cage over there. I bet Noah's Ark is over on the other side of that rock. Everybody who planted themselves has, you know, loads of cool stuff. And I'm every 20 minutes or so abandoning this because I might get better results over here. It was frustrating. That afternoon, we all moved to the other side and we're all looking at this one site because one of the students actually found a big piece of Triceratops. And so we're all there and then we're all looking in that area. And after about half an hour, I thought, well, I bet if I look down in the valley where everything gets washed anyway, I bet I'll find something. And I'm not kidding you, the same guy from the day before, he starts looking where I just was. And I hear him yell this excited profanity, and everybody goes running to him. And according to the paleontologist, what the guy found was, quote, what some would consider a once-in-a-lifetime find. It was the knotty, bony ridge of a Pachycephalosaurus, his skull. And, you know, we're all like, awesome, how exciting, high fives. And, you know, it was really cool. But that night, you know, I slit the guy's tires with a raptor claw. I was frustrated with me. And again, it's not that I was doing something wrong. I just wasn't doing a very good job of being here in the moment. And it was frustrating because I make a decent living telling people to do exactly that. But I didn't feel impatient. I just felt intolerant of this, of the process of being here and doing this. But that produces the same fruit as impatience. And a couple scientists, they explained to me that almost all the people who've joined them over the years in this work, they struggle the same way. And as they talked about it, I was reminded of how I've heard monks talk about people who visit the monasteries for a few days and how painful it is for them for those first, and sometimes the whole time, those first days, to simply enter into a given task, to just be here without like that, well, but what's the point of this and what's next? And it's not just a lack of patience, it's this lack of tolerance for life right here. Unless you can assure me that there's going to be a payoff. I mean, we're all good for wax on, wax off. If you promise that at the end, I'll be a great fighter, you know. On the last day of this trip, by the way, one of the paleontologists took us to this warehouse that wasn't open to the public yet. He was working on this 40-foot long mosasaur skeleton. Mosasaur is a big marine reptile. And it's in sections of plaster still. It's still encased in stone, and then they put plaster around it and pull it out. And he and his team were meticulously removing layers of sediment from different parts. He was working on the skull. And I asked when they'd found the animal, and they said they found it in 2020, didn't get it out of the ground, and encased in these big plaster jackets, until 2022, 2 years later. And it was midway through 2023, and they had only removed inches of the sandstone with, you know, the dentistry tools and the scraping needles. And I said, well, how much longer do you think it will take before you'll get it down to where you want it? And he said, a couple years. And it was that day that something clicked. I realized I have been operating all week on this underlying anxiety that I'm running out of time and that I'm going to waste the week if I don't get big results, bigger than what I'm currently getting. I'd been doing that off and on all week long. And again, it's not the regular definition of impatience. It was this underlying sense of scarcity that put every moment under this microscope of measured value and worth. And I realized it's not just that week. Questions about what shortcuts I could take, whether a thing is worth my effort, worth my time, worth my attention right now. Should I move ahead? Impulses about jumping ahead to the part I can better value or see if it's going to justify me putting any effort into it. Racing ahead to the payoff, to the punchline. Giving into the impulse to jump completely out of something because I just can't see how it's going to be worth it for me to stay in it, to stay at it. I do this a lot. And I think a lot of us do. And so for us to be people getting more and more comfortable with living in the here and now, instead of continuing to regret the past and anxiously anticipate the future, which is the mind's default if you don't adjust the controls, we have to get good at doing things for their own sake. Learning to enjoy the passing of time, to accept it, without so much anxiety about whether it's a good use of time. Enjoying the passage of time without measuring it so much. Allowing ourselves to be almost playful, the way a kid doesn't play because, well, I'll have better hand-eye coordination later. To just be playful with the present, to do things because they're enjoyable or because it's what's happening, not just doing things because maybe I can, if I keep doing this, I'll get good enough to make somebody pay me to do it later, not just engaging with a thing because it's guaranteed to provide amazing results or guaranteed to add value to our lives, to award me social points, to make sure I have great memories or good stories. Those are all great things, sure. But also, we have to get good at engaging with what's happening because it's what's happening. It doesn't matter if it can be made useful or produce particular results later. Enjoying the passage of time without measuring it or demanding on it. And this may not seem intuitive at first, but this has everything to do with are being people not only of peace, but of real love. My struggle to stay present with what I was actually doing because I felt pulled away by the insistence for more favorable results, that's directly tied to my struggle with loving people as they are, here and now. For decades, I've worked consciously to make the person I'm speaking to know that they're being heard, that I'm prioritizing them. It's one of the easiest ways to employ the golden rule that I can think of. I try not to be conscious of not fidgeting too much, to look away at every little distraction, to square my shoulders so that people, you know, I give them eye contact. I want my body to show them I'm not thinking about being somewhere else right now. And I don't always do a good job of this. In fact, I often do a terrible job, but I stay at it because I know nobody wants to feel like the person they are talking to would rather dig somewhere else. How can we love someone if we are thinking that they need to be other than they are, or we need to be other than where we are? How can we tap into Christ's kind of love if we don't address our habit for engaging others with a, yeah, but what else? Who else? Sort of spirit. My resistance to being here and now is directly connected to my resistance to accepting the world I'm actually in, and it's directly connected to my struggle to love the people in my life exactly as they are. And I understand that transactional results-oriented thinking is here to stay in many ways. Imagine being a CEO who sends out an email after hearing this and it says, hey team, we're going to learn to enjoy the work for its own sake. Let's just let Q2 worry about itself. I mean, I know that's not going to happen, but this is business. What, does this business commerce limited time mentality, does it have to affect every part of our lives? Do we have to think of our lives as little nervous businesses, little brands we're constantly managing, where what we do has to have some return on investment, has to have some clear, articulable point that makes sense to my overall goals for maximizing my potential, my profitability, or I'm going to skip it, or I'm going to skip out, or skip ahead, or I can't do either. All right, well, then I'm going to be miserable. Or can we begin to understand that when Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow, or literally, give no thought for tomorrow, he's not in denial. He's not being irresponsible. He was in large part talking about a kind of patience, this increasing tolerance for this, for now, for engaging what is here and now for its own sake, taking your eyes off the horizon every once in a while to be here, to do this, and to be open to it, to allow it. I wonder how many of you say things like, well, I'm not an artist, or I'm not handy, I can't cook. And the issue is your resistance to entering into things that won't allow you to skip ahead to the results. That there's a subtle impatience that's an intolerance for that long space where you just don't know if the result you're going to get is going to justify the time you spent. Maybe you avoid things like this because you carry this uncritically held sense that you don't have enough time to learn things unless you're going to be really good at it, unless it's going to enhance what you already do. How many of us grew up in households where we learned, as though it were a moral issue, that everything we do as children has to lead to college acceptance later? There's no patience or tolerance for things that weren't pointed at that result. Well, what happens to the peace and the patience and the tolerance of an adult who's grown up their whole lives pressured to achieve things decades away? How many of us grew up being told that the thing we're good at was worth chasing if we could turn it into a living? I mean, so many of us adults, we don't have hobbies because we never learned it was okay to have things we just do, just for doing them. Even if nobody pays us or applauds us, we just do it because it's good to enjoy life without measuring it all the time. How much do we miss because the invitation of this moment always seems like it will cause us to miss out on something better or more important somewhere else? And then after a while, we've developed a habit of measuring this moment and finding it to be lacking something. It's in our way. It's in the way of maybe potentially finding better results somewhere else. So we hone the habit of unplugging our minds from the here and now, and off we go. No judgment here at all. I genuinely wonder how many of us have this dimension of impatience that's really an intolerance for process, no guarantees, and this anxiety about how much time for such things we have anyway. And it's left us missing out on a lot of life. A habitual story in our heads about the necessity for payoff and value. Well, if we're going to be people that grow in patience and love, we have to grow in our ability to control our reactions, to tame our impulses, to be upset, all of that. But we'll also be growing in the kind of patience that sees this moment as the only real thing. The past is a dream. Tomorrow's fiction. What's happening now? This, right now. This can't be skipped. And it's great to have a plan, and it's important to be wise with our lives, but we must also learn to dig right here without measuring it as, will it be worth it? This is what's happening. This moment, the right here and the right now, inviting me to enjoy it for its own sake without giving in to the impulse all the time, that maybe I could have more control if I skipped ahead or skipped out. Give no thought about tomorrow, or at least give less thought of tomorrow. Be here, dig here, love here. So, how do I end a message without giving in to that voice that says, make sure you button this thing up really well? Maybe I'll give you 3 points. They all start with P. How do I end this in a way that makes it unquestionably useful and worth the time that you've spent listening to it? How do I do that? I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not going to worry about it.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.